It's the biggest news of the day, and it happens one day after elimination. The Vancouver Canucks have fired general manager Mike Gillis today, and yeah, it comes less than 24 hours after this spectacle at Rogers Arena.
This game was supposed to be the fight to keep things alive for the Canucks, but from the second period on, they have checked out.
Yep. Have not had much.
They pay big money to come to these games. It's their prerogative how they handle themselves, and we're in this. We're the ones that are in this as far as a team. I don't know how to answer the question, but I'm certainly not going to complain about it. That's their call. They pay money to come see the games. They're not happy. They can voice their opinion how they'd like to.
As the Ducks knock off the Canucks 3-0, and in doing so, the Canucks playoff hopes, as slim as they were, are officially dead.
They were booing the players too, which is understandable. I mean, they're as frustrated as we are. We should be in the playoffs. I think that's the bottom line. We didn't play good enough for 20 games after New Year's, and it's costing us right now. It's understandable. If you can't take boos, you shouldn't play in this league.
No postseason play for this edition of the Vancouver Canucks, and this game here showed a lot in terms of their ability to battle. It was not there in the two most important periods after a decent first, and Vancouver will have to deal with a whole lot of questions from players to coaches to personnel and management.
Personally, I don't think it's the right thing to do, but at the end of the day, the fans come and they can do whatever they want. I like to think that, put it this way, we're all going to take the blame for this. It's not just one or two guys, it's the whole team.
So interspersed in there, you had the final call from last night's pretty embarrassing 3-0 setback at the hands of the Anaheim Ducks, a game that officially eliminated Vancouver from playoff contention. And you heard John Tortorella, Henrik Sedin, and Kevin Bieksa was that last voice that you heard there. And as we welcome you into hour number two of the big show, it's Pat Steinberg and Josh Humphries along with you. Hump, they were chanting last night. Like, they were chanting fire Gillis, and Francisco Aquilini must have been in the stands and said, "Hey, yep, They're telling me to fire Gillis. I better go fire Gillis." They listen to the fans. That's why Mike Gillis is no longer employed as GM of the Canucks today.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, probably
there's no
not.
Other reason for him, but as soon as the fans started chanting, he's like, well, that's a good idea.
You know what?
That's a good idea.
I hadn't thought of that before. It's just funny because you usually don't see that. You usually don't see, talk to Oilers fans. How long have they been petitioning for them to fire Lowe in Edmonton? I don't think Darrell Cates has been like, oh, geez, there's been rallies outside of Rexall Place. We better fire Kevin Lowe. And I'm not saying that's what the Canucks did whatsoever. I just find the timing to be very, very interesting. And it's an extremely immediate reaction less than 24 hours after this team has been eliminated from playoff contention.
I think he had it in his mind he was going to do this a long time ago, but I think he was just waiting for the Canucks to officially be eliminated from the playoffs. I think that may be more of a reasonable timeline to believe than having, waiting for the fans or whatever. But it was going to happen. We all knew it was going to happen. We knew it was coming. I don't think there's very many people who thought Mike Gillis was going to be around as the GM. I think a lot of people thought he would finish the season as the GM of the team. Not like Mike Gillis can do any moves to damage the team at this point in time.
I got to be honest with you. I'm surprised that it happened now.
I'm very
pretty
surprised
shocked
it was today. Yeah.
Like, and I mean, I go back to our conversation a week ago where I said that, and I still stand by it. I believe that there was some merit to letting him have another year as general manager of the team. However, whether they were good, like, I'm not surprised they made the decision, regardless of our conversation. I'm just surprised at the timing. I thought that this would be one of those scenarios where they get eliminated, regular season finishes, they go through green garbage bag day, and then they go through their internal meetings and make a decision after that. So I wonder what expedited this process. What made it that they were like, okay, you know what, we can't wait until July. We can't wait until June. We've got to do this here in mid-April before the regular season's over. And we'll never know the answer as to
why.
Might
give you some time to get a staff in place for the draft, because they don't even have a president or a GM right now to go into the draft.
I fully understand that, but we're just guessing. Like, we have no idea why they decided to do it now, because typically this is not the way it gets done. Typically this is not the timing that we see. So I'm intrigued by it, and yet not surprised at the actual move itself, just because you know, I think that a lot of people knew that this was a possibility. Whether we saw it coming or not, I don't know. But we knew this was a possibility, no doubt about it. So some questions to ask. Number one, did they bow to fan pressure? I don't think so. I'm kind of with you. I think that this is something that they had been thinking of for a little while, and this was clearly on the mind of owner Francesco Eccolini, who's going to talk tomorrow. They're not going to do any media today. Going to talk tomorrow in Vancouver, and we'll actually hear ownership's spin on things and why they decided to do this now, why they decided to do it at all. But I don't really think that the chants at Rogers Arena yesterday or the phone calls that Jeff Patterson and all the folks in Vancouver Sports Radio have been taking for the last months, I don't know if that was the reason why. I just think that you saw empty seats in the building and you saw your team missing the playoffs when the expectations were supposed to be a much, much higher, and you've seen your team fail to meet expectations for three consecutive years when it mattered most. That would be the reasoning why, as opposed to, bowing to what fans think. Because I just think that this was something that they probably would have had in mind for quite a while.
You're exactly right. I mean, they knew they were going to make this move with Mike Gillis. I mean, I think it really happened when you have the Luongo situation. I think right then was maybe the last straw that ownership and management had. But you don't want to fire your GM if you're still a team that's in a playoff contention. I mean, a GM doesn't do a whole lot for your team going down the stretch. I mean, the recalls and things like that for the minors, they take care. But after the trade deadline, really, what does a GM do for a team? I mean, gets ready for the draft, prepares for the draft. There's things like that, doing some scouting. But you look at what he did ever since that Luongo trade. The team has been bad. They've had a rough.
They weren't great before that.
They weren't great before that. The 7-game losing streak, and I think, well, if you really want to look at it, ever since they played the Flames in that infamous line brawl, the Canucks season has gone straight down the tank since that point in time. And I think they've known that they wanted to make this move, but you wait for that one thing to happen, so they're officially out of the playoffs. Okay, now we can fire him. We can justify firing Mike Gillis because you missed the postseason. There's a lot of things going on, and it really, there's so many questions in Vancouver right now. It's incredible.
So the question that I think is on most minds is, okay, who's next? And who do we see hired by the Vancouver Canucks in the near future? But we don't know. I mean, Wayne Gretzky's name is out there. Bob Nicholson's name is out there.
Jay Feaster's name is out there. Jay Feaster's name is out there. That's the big one right now because of his relationship with John Tortorella.
On top of that, there's the names of Marcus Naslund and Trevor Linden being thrown around. I mean, there are plenty of names that are out there, but that'll take care of itself in the coming days, weeks, and months. So we don't know who's next. But here's what we can talk about. What does whoever comes in have to work with? What do they have to mold? What do they have to try and maximize? And what type of team can they start to build around and build for the future with? And I still think that there is time for this team to make a couple of changes and not have to go the route of the Oilers or the Flames where they miss 5 or 6 playoffs in a row. Like, what the Canucks have the luxury of, the Flames and the Oilers did not do, is they're going to try and make the switch. They're going to try and do the pivot after missing the playoffs for 1 year. There's not going to be that misery of being a 3-4-5, and in the Oilers' case, 8-year team out of the playoffs before, okay, we're going to go this philosophical shift. Like, it took 4 years out of the playoffs for the Flames to do that. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's just going to be one for the Vancouver Canucks to do that. And I think that there are some pieces there that can be maximized and help this team going forward, as opposed to where the Flames were last year when they tried to do that. There are more maximizable pieces, if that's even a word. There are more pieces to be maximized in Vancouver right now. I think that you can get something good for Ryan Kessler.
Oh, absolutely.
I think you can get something good for Kevin Bieksa. I think that players like that, you can bring in decent picks. You can bring in decent prospects.
You need to restock your cupboards there.
One, and these are the guys that can help you do it. And you can really set yourself. Yes, it'll be some short-term pain, but I don't think the long-term pain is going to be as much as it would be in other places if you make the deals this summer. I think you're stuck with the Sedins in a lot of ways. I really do. But I still think they're capable of more than what we've seen. I don't think the Sedins are washed up. I don't think they're done. You don't go from what they were to what they are now in the snap of a finger. I just think it's a bad season for Henrik and Daniel. You take a look at Bo Horvat and Hunter Shinkarik and Niklas Jensen and even Eddie Lax, a pretty decent goaltending prospect. Whoever you get in trades, whoever you draft this year, if you do it right, And if you make the moves this summer, and if you don't pussyfoot and lollygag or whatever, I think that you can really set your team up and get yourself back to where you want a whole lot quicker than we have seen from other teams.
And it depends who comes in there. If it is a Trevor Linden that comes in as the president, does he want to go with the full-on rebuild? Does he believe that maybe it's a better fit for this organization if they do, not to the extent of a Calgary-Edmonton, but get rid of a lot of their guys that they can get rid of and then move up from that way? Or do they kind of bring in a guy, and if Trevor Linden says it's a short-term thing, which I think it can be. I agree with you 100%. It can be fixed short-term in Vancouver. You mentioned the Ryan Kessler. Yeah, get rid of him. You could get
You're maximizing an asset and a really good hockey player.
You trade him away, you're going to get probably a first-round pick and probably a pretty good prospect for Ryan Kessler, because he's still got a contract that's favorable for a team to pick up, and he's got some good years ahead of him. Kevin BX is another guy who's got some good years ahead of him. You bring in a goaltender, you've got lots of free agent goaltenders, and Ryan Miller or Yaroslav Halak, you convince one of those guys to sign a 4 or 5 year deal with your team, all of a sudden your goaltending situation's fixed as well in Vancouver, so it's can be very easily fixed.
But you've got to do it, and you've got to do it when you really have the opportunity, and your opportunity is right now. So yes, your elite team playoff window is closing, and you're no longer a top echelon group. You're not. That time has passed, but now is the time to make the changes. We'll see if Francesco Aquilini at the very top, and if whoever they bring in to be the new general manager has the guts and the fortitude to be able to actually make these moves, because it ain't easy in a Canadian market. Much more on this as the afternoon goes along. He's Josh Humphries. My name is Pat Steinberg. This is the big show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Hour number two is jam-packed, including an interview with Craig Conroy in about 15 minutes. The Abbotsford Heat general manager is going to join us, the Flames special assistant to the GM, and a whole lot more. Lots to talk about, including Sven Berchi being named the American Hockey League Player of the Week. We're chasing Sven for later on this week, hoping to have him on Thursday. But I think it'll be really cool to kind of hear what Conroy has to say about the progression of Berchi. 18 points in his last 12 games, 7 points in 2 games last week for the 2011 first-round pick, and he's the American League Player of the Week. So Craig Conroy is going to join us at 2:25. And 40 years ago today, something pretty remarkable happened, and something that still stands up now. We'll get to that before 3 o'clock as well, but we have to revisit what happened in Jersey last night.
Here come the Devils now, up ice into the Calgary zone, left circle, Bernier the shot. What a save by Ramo as he comes up with the trapper to pull that one in, and the shot from the left circle by Steve Bernier. You can put it in the lead column. The Flames behind the goaltending of Carey Ramo, making 31 saves, shut out the New Jersey Devils by a count of 1-0.
It was quite the performance from Carey Ramo. Second career shutout, second shutout of the season. All things considered, Ramo was pretty darn good, and he was the story. And back to that in just a second. But I'll throw this out there, because it shows you how weird hockey is. 5 games on the road, Flames win the final 3, lose the first 2. I thought they were worlds better in the first 2 games than they were in the final 3. Like, I have not been impressed at all by 60 minutes of Flames hockey in this 3-game win streak. Against Tampa, I thought the Lightning carried the play, but a great performance from Ramo. Against Florida, that was the Joey McDonald show, and you're playing against the Florida Panthers, and they controlled, 80% of that hockey game. You still found a way to win. And then yesterday, that was a game that I didn't think it was close at all. The Devils just could not score. So, hockey-wise, and what we've seen on the ice, I've been the least impressed with the Flames I think I have been all year long. Now, granted, they're beat right up and they're extremely shorthanded, so I think there's a little bit that plays into that too. And they're probably tired. This is a long season, a very condensed final stretch. You're playing shorthanded. You're playing a physically taxing style. I think there's a little fatigue that steps into it, but it just shows you how weird hockey is. They were pretty impressive against Toronto and Ottawa for the most part, and not so impressive in their last 3, yet the results are completely opposite. They lose the 2 in Ontario and then sweep 3 in the United States.
Yeah, and Carey Ramo, I don't think there's much a debate that he's the number one goalie here in Calgary, and I don't know if there's much a debate that he should be the number one goalie here in Calgary next season as well. He has looked very good this
season. I think there's plenty of debate about that. I really do.
Like, who are you going to bring in? Like, why would you bring in somebody else right now?
We'll get to that in just a second. You're going too big picture because I want to stick on what happened last night. I want to play this clip for you. I know you played a little bit of Jaromír Jágr earlier in the show, but I want to play this because, man, oh man, how high praise is this from one of the greatest ever? Like, we're talking top 10 of all time in Jágr talking about what he saw from Ramo in between the pipes last night. And Jágr fairly complimentary because he didn't think some of the NHL greats were scoring on Ramo last night.
Well, no matter who would be on ice today, Gretzky, Lemieux, there's no chance anybody score. How much one team can dominate the other? It was total domination. It just wasn't our night.
He picked a night to play one of his best games, Ramo.
I played with him in Omsk, but I want to see one more night like that. But I'm going to retire pretty soon, so I might not have a chance to see it.
So Gretzky, Lemieux, doesn't matter who's a court. And we're not talking about just like, hey, here's Josh Humphreys. Like, we're talking about Jaromír Jágr saying that didn't matter if it was Gretzky or Lemieux. He's played with Lemieux, and it doesn't matter.
Peter DeBoer comments afterwards, too, about that, saying that they could have played for another hour.
Probably wouldn't have scored
on Kari Ramo yesterday.
Ramo was in a zone. He was dialed right in.
A couple of breaks.
And the big, oh, yeah, I mean, the
disallowed goal, the one that Russell chipped off the goal line. There's a couple breaks. But
the Butler kick off the goal line too. I mean, there were some breaks, but Ramo was outstanding last night, and I just think that's kind of cool when you hear Jaromír Jágr again. We're not just talking about the greats of the game right now. We're talking about the greats of all time that he's throwing out there.
No matter who would be on ice today, Gretzky, Lemieux. Like, there's no chance anybody scored.
I like that quote. There's no chance anybody's scoring yesterday. That's pretty high praise for Mr. Ramo.
It is, and he had a great game, and he's been fantastic of late for the Flames. Really happy with what he did, and we talked about a couple of breaks, but when you're a goaltender, every goaltender gets some breaks or some bounces, and that goal, the Ryan Carter, gets disallowed because it's kicked in. I mean, a goal still beats you there, so you know you can kind of beat yourself up about that as a goaltender, and Kari Ramo will be down on yourself for even letting that one go in and having to go to review, but Kari Ramo doesn't. He bounces back. He plays solid. He didn't give the New Jersey Devils a sniff even in that third period there. The Devils are pressing and looking to get that equalizing goal. That was, you know, fighting for their playoff lives. They needed that to stay in the playoff race.
Well, they're done. The Flames ended their playoff hopes last night. And if you're the Devils, you're walking out of there knowing that your playoff hopes are done. I mean, you're still mathematically alive.
You tried so hard. That's
but
what
you're
I mean.
Walking
they
out
were
of there
going
saying,
so
like,
hard at the end there.
What more could we have done? We worked them the entire game. We got plenty of scoring opportunities, and we just ran. Like, what more could the Devils have done? They were short. No Eliash, no Henrique, no Salvador. Like, they were shorthanded too, and they still went out there and put it all on the line. They gave exactly the effort that you need to give in a situation like that. They played desperate, but sometimes you just run into a team that frustrates you. You run into a team that's got good sticks. Opportunistic, timely scoring, and a hell of a goaltender, and you're unable to come
Calgary
away with the win.
Had all that last night.
They sure
Calgary
did.
Had everything bouncing in their direction last night.
Okay, so let's go big picture because you brought it up, and I'm with you. I believe at this point that it should be Kari Ramo who gets the nod to be the number one goaltender next year. Okay. I'm not 100% confident that's going to happen, but I would like to see Ramo be the guy to start next year. And that doesn't preclude the Flames from going out and bringing in an experienced backup. In fact, it's not the worst thing in the world. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing because we don't know what John Gillies is going to do. My guess is Gillies goes back and plays at Providence for year three. Why not have Ortio in the American League? If you wanted to go, if you just hold on, just hold on. If you wanted to have Ortio in the American League and have another year of him getting big time number one without a doubt minutes, knowing that Ramo's up at the end of his next year, I'd have no problem with Ortio in the American League next year. And if you wanted to go in and bring in a 28-year-old goaltender, just for instance, like a Chad Johnson in Boston. If you were to bring in a guy like that who you knew was going to be your backup, you were fairly confident in him when he was your backup, he can lessen the load on your number one, I don't have a problem with that at all if they wanted to go down that road. I also don't have a problem if they want to make Yoni Arteo the backup next year. Mm-hmm. What I do have a problem with, or what I would not like to see, is them go out and bring in another guy that, oh, he could be the number one, too. I'd like to see Ramo given the opportunity next year. And you know what? If he shows us that he's not ready, if he shows us that this year, you know, maybe he was playing a little over his skis, well, oh well, because next offseason there'll be just as many opportunities to bring in a goaltender as there are right now. Give Ramo a chance for next year. That's what I would like to see.
You've already got him under contract for next season. You've already put all the stock in him. It wasn't Brian Burke that gave him the contract, but it was Jay Feaster. And what he showed you down the stretch here, there's absolutely no reason to not have him as your number one goaltender. I'm with you. Bring in a backup. I'm more like to see Yoni Arteo, and I know you have this debate about, well, is it better for Yoni Arteo to get a lot of games in Abbotsford? But me and you before had the debate, it's better for Yoni Arteo to be up here and face NHL shooters and have that.
That's not the debate I want to get into, because if they go that, it doesn't hurt him one way or the other. Doesn't, like, Arteo in the American League next year or Arteo in the NHL as a backup next year, there are benefits
fine
both
either
ways.
And so I believe that, Caron, but I'm with you. You can't bring a starting goaltender, and I know everyone's saying, well, James Reimer is going to be available, and he's got the history with Brian Burke.
Right.
James Reimer, even if you bring him in here, are you really confident with that guy? James Reimer was good 2 years ago when he got Toronto into the playoffs. This year, he has not been very good. So based on what we've seen recently from James Reimer, he's probably not good enough to be a starting goaltender in the NHL, although he's going to try to get himself in a position.
I think he's shown at least as much as Ramo, if not more, that he's ready to be a number one in this league. I would say that. But I just think knowing where you are as an organization... Yeah.
It's and I know not a waste year next year. It's a rebuilding year again.
I know that Ramo is not Burke's guy. Like, Burke was not here when Ramo was acquired. I understand all of that. But and maybe that plays into it. And it's why I'm not confident that that's exactly the way they're going to go. Or it's why I think there's a chance they might go in a different direction. Who knows? But personally, from what I've seen since about December and what I've seen since he came back from missing 50 days from an injury, I believe Ramo has earned himself a shot to get the leg up at training camp next year and to be the guy, because he's been the better goaltender all year long. There has not been a time once where I've said Reto Berra is better than Kari Ramo, but the team wanted to give Berra his opportunity. Now Ramo's showing us that there's something there. So let's see if he can show us that over a full season through a full training camp where he knows that he's the number one guy. I think there's some value in that. We'll see what the Flames and Brian Burke do this offseason, because what I'm not confident in, I'm confident in Ramo, I'm not confident that the Flames are thinking the same way you and I are.
And if the Flames go out and tell Kari Ramo that, hey, you're the number one guy coming into this season, coming into camp next year, this is your job to lose, maybe that really gets you to see what Kari Ramo has, because that could put a lot of pressure on the guy and really show him that he's got to just maintain the way he's played. And then we'll see a lot from Kari Ramo next season as well. But I'm with you. I would like to see Kari Ramo as the number one guy.
But, again, wouldn't preclude the Flames from going out and doing something, just because the rumors are out there. And I think what we've learned in this business over the last half decade, where there's smoke, there's fire when it comes to rumors, or at least a lot of the time when there's smoke, there's fire. He is Josh Humphries. My name is Pat Steinberg, and the Sportsnet Jet is back, this time teaming up with Vision Travel to send you to the Grey Cup. And here's what you get if you end up being a fan club winner. You're going to get round-trip airfare from Calgary to Vancouver in late November and early December for the Grey Cup at BC Place, airport and hotel transfers by your own private motor coach. You get 3 nights hotel in Van City, Grey Cup game tickets, and you'll get access to the sidelines. Like, this is a pretty all-inclusive trip for the Canadian Football League fan. If you're one, if you've got a friend who's whatever, use your fan club points to sign up right now, or you can book your own seat. If you don't even want to play it by chance and risk that you won't win, go book your own seat right now. Sportsnet.ca/960 for all the details. This prize is brought to you by Vision Travel, who specializes in extraordinary sporting experiences, including the 2014 Grey Cup in Vancouver on November 30th. Packages include flights, transfers, accommodations, and tickets. Find out more at visiontravel.ca/Grey Cup. Okay, next up, just how far has Sven Berchi come? We'll find out around the corner with Craig Conroy on The Big Show. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talking sports in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Pat Steinberg along with you in studio today. Flames back in action. Home game tomorrow against the LA Kings. It's an 8 o'clock start here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're on the air at 7 o'clock. Two more home games to go. Wednesday against the Kings, and then Friday, the only home game this year against the Winnipeg Jets. Now, a lot of Flames fans were pretty encouraged when they heard the news yesterday of Sven Berge being named American Hockey League Player of the Week. 7 points in two games. You take a look over a little bit of a longer stretch, 18 points over his last 12. Let's go down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline and welcome in our good friend, who just happens to be the general manager of the top affiliate of the Flames, the Abbotsford Heat. Craig Conroy's with us. Hello, Connie.
How's it going?
It's good, man. How happy were you to see that nice little honor for Mr. Berge yesterday?
Oh, it's nice. I mean, you know, anytime, you know, I think all the expectations were still high coming in on Sven this year, and maybe we didn't get off to the start we wanted, and you know, it was an up-and-down year, but for him to go down there and start me playing so well, that's a good sign for us in the future for sure.
How has he, I guess, developed or progressed or changed? And it's now been, you know, fairly long chunk of time there. We're talking a number of months he's been down in Abbotsford. What have you seen from him progression-wise?
Well, I think just as, you know, not overall attitude, but, I mean, obviously there was the disappointment of going down there. And, you know, he feels he is an NHL player and that he should be playing in the NHL. So he had a little bit of a slow start, but I think once he kind of, and Troy did a good job with him, and, you know, he knows now, hey, I'm going to have to be one of the best players in this league down here, and then so I can get back up to where I want to be, and that's in the NHL. So, you know, he's had a great attitude. He's come in, you know, he's trying to work on different parts of his game. He's trying to play better in his own zone, you know, play with more pace, things that Bob kind of talked to him about when he went down. So, you know, and to have the points, that's always, it's a huge confidence boost for him and gives him some confidence going in, you know, as the season winds down in the playoffs and then what he's got to do in the summer to get back into Calgary.
As an organization, though, you want a player to be somewhat pissed off when they get a sign. Like, you want them to have that as motivation, but you also want them to go down with the right attitude. So it can be a tough balance to kind of strike, can it?
Well, it's hard. I mean, I've been in the same situation. You know, I think the first time I got sent down from Montreal after I was up for a few games, it's an emotional roller coaster. You're so happy to be in the NHL, then you get sent down, and you're like, you know, you're questioning everything. What did I do? What do I need to do? And instead of just going down there and playing, you're thinking about a million things. So, you know, it is a little bit of a struggle, and no one's ever happy when they get sent down. I mean, that's just, you know, that's not where they want to be. So for him to kind of go down there, and it's not like he was pouting or he was upset. I mean, when you saw him, he was, you know, I didn't see the big smile on his face when I first got down there, but, you know, when I was just in Utica watching the team, he, you know, he just seems so much more natural and back to his old form.
When you have a player that you're sending down and really asking him to work on his all-round game, is it almost natural that adjustment is taking place, that maybe the points do go down?
Well, you know, when we talk about, well, what does Sven need to do? You know, he needs to go down there and his D-zone play and his D-zone come. So it's all about defense, you know, everything that, I mean, he's always been able to get points and put points up on the board, but it's all going to be all the things away from the puck. How does he put himself in a position? Does he, you know, on the back checks? Does he come through certain areas? And when is he covered with, I guess, his point guy in the D-zone, like, you can't get lost. So, you know, you're trying to focus on the defense, and then all of a sudden, maybe your offense gets a little bit sideways, and you know, you're not even really thinking about that. So, you know, you go down there, you're trying to do all the things right defensively, and it might cause you not to get as many points as you like to right away. But you know, he seems to he's well adjusted now for sure.
Craig Conroy's with us here on the Big Show. So still pretty high hopes for what Berge can be at the NHL level.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, the one thing when I go around the city is, you know, is Sven done? Is, you know, this is a young guy that's just starting his pro career. I mean, we don't want to write him off. I think the one thing that, you know, and like myself and probably a lot of people, hey, the 3 goals when he came up for the 5 games, that was exciting. And then, you know, I think all the hype the next year with the lockout, and then, you know, it was up and down, but then he came and got a point a game towards the end of the year, and then this year we're just expecting so much. I think he was expecting it, the organization, the city, and there was so much pressure on him. I think that's the one thing we just have to, you know, remember. He's just a young man playing, and he's just learning the pro game, so it's going to take a little time. I mean, a perfect example for us is probably, you know, I've seen similar things with Michael Backlund. I mean, it's been up and down, and you know, I think if you ask anybody this year, they really feel like Bax has really taken the steps in the right direction, and you know, they think he's going to be a very, very good player in the NHL. So, you know, I think with that said, we got to give Sven some time, and we want to do the right thing. We don't want to just rush him into something. We want him to be a great player for years to come.
Do you still think he can project to being a top six NHLer?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the one thing, he showed flashes of where, you know, eight or nine games, he gets points in almost every game last year. You know, the three goals that he had, it's just a matter of we need him to be more consistent. He's got to get stronger, a little faster, so this is a huge summer. But I do think the one thing he can do is get points, and I think it kind of shows you in the last two games. I mean, 7 points in two games. He's got it in him. We just need to be able to have him do that at the NHL level. And right now, that's all we want him to worry about, is going down there, producing in the American League, and getting his game ready. And then the summer is really going to be that's the most important thing. I mean, he's got to get stronger, faster, and, you know, ready against, because you look at this Western Conference, every team we play are big, fast, strong men. So he's just got to get ready to adapt to that kind of pace and level. And if he, you know, there's no doubt he's got the skill to do it. So it's just a matter of all those other things kind of coming together. And then I think, you know, I think whether it's the AHL, NHL, he's going to put up points at some point. You know, it's just a matter of time.
Craig Conroy's with us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline. And Craig, your team, the Abbotsford Heat, now 39-25-7. They can clinch a playoff berth tonight, depending on some other things happening on the out-of-town scoreboard. How would you judge your team's second half of the season, knowing the injuries and I guess the roster turmoil that they've had to deal with?
You know, it's never easy. I mean, obviously, the American League's for developing players, and the one nice thing is that you've seen the guys all come up and do well. You know, whether it's Granlund, Reinhart, Hanowski's, they've all. But the problem is you've taken five or six guys, seven guys off your team. I mean, you have Breen, Witherspoon, Billings. All these guys have come up and showed that they can play in the NHL. But with that said, when you know, a guy like, it's probably the one position that really hurts you is goaltending. When we lost Ordeo, I mean, that really put us behind the eight ball down there. So, I mean, I think the guys have done great. I mean, we've lost some games, and we maybe aren't right where we want to be, but as we move in towards the playoffs here, we're getting back everybody. Everybody will be healthy, and I think we're going to be able to make a long run. I mean, it's not going to be easy, but it'll be nice to have everybody back there and you know, feel like, okay, this is the team that we had at the start of the year when we're winning all the games.
How would you evaluate this season for head coach Troy Ward?
You know, I think it's been a good season. I mean, he's helped develop these young players, getting them ready to the NHL. And also, you know, I mean, when we've had the down times, whether we've called up guys from the East Coast League or, you know, if we've put guys in on ATOs, you know, he's done his best. I mean, he's got them to still in the playoffs with all the injuries and all the call-ups, and for him to kind of go day-to-day and battle and the travel. I mean, that's the one thing that Abbotsford probably has the toughest travel in the league, and he handles it. He handles it really well. I mean, it can't be an easy job to shuffle the travel and all these call ups and having so many different players. I was watching the Toronto game on TV, and they said they had 40 different players play against just Toronto. So that kind of tells you how much turnover we've had there, for sure.
Yeah. Anybody that we should know about, like we're here in Calgary, and Flames fans are more focused on the farm than they have been for a long time because of where the organization's at, but we're still removed from it. We don't get to see a lot of it up close and personal. You evaluate this stuff every single day. Who should we know about? Who's really impressed you? Who's really impressed this organization?
Well, I mean, obviously all the guys that got called up, you know, everyone got to see him a little bit, but for me, it was Tyler Witherspoon. The year that he had down there, you know, the way he's kind of come from the first first few games in Lake Erie where I thought, oh boy, we got a long ways to go. You know, I think Troy and Robbie Satoric have done a great job with him. He's made huge strides, and I think he kind of proved that when he was up. But even a guy like Josh Gerst and Corbin Knight, that at the beginning I thought, whoa, the pace is really a little bit too much for him. And they just seemed to, you know, as the year went along, the more they played, the more comfortable they got, they just seemed like they've really come along. And obviously, the guy that probably played, I would say, the best for us down there was Marcus Granlund. I mean, he really, right from the day one, I thought, holy cow, this guy's playing well. I mean, he really kind of just gelled. And, you know, you're always a little worried with the language and he possibly could go home. And, you know, there was a lot of factors, but I was really impressed with his season down there. And unfortunately, when he was up, he got hurt with us. But, you know, at some point he's going to be able to go back down there and play some games and help us in the playoffs there.
With Granlund, I know that one of the worries was, hey, is this going to be a guy who can adjust to playing on North American ice with less time and space, less room? How much of an adjustment is this going to be? It didn't really seem like much of an adjustment, though.
No, you know, it really didn't. I thought it was going to take more time and he was going to have, you know, more difficulty with the language and stuff like that. But overall, he was an easy transition for him. I think having Ordeo there made a big difference, though, language-wise. And, it was fun to watch him. I mean, it was fun to watch him in the NHL, and it was fun to watch him in the American League. I think the one person I think I forgot that I'd like to mention is Michael Ferland, though. He was probably the one guy that at he was playing the best hockey I've ever seen him play. I mean, I was really, you know, what he brings, a big physical body. He's got hands. He was scoring plays. It really, it was really fun to watch him. And it was just a matter of probably days or weeks before he got called up, and then he got injured and he was done for the year. So, I mean, with that said, he's a guy that really fits the Brian Burke mold. And I'm looking forward to seeing how, you know, next year coming back, how he does, because he was by far one of the guys that was every game I went in there, I thought, wow, he's come a long ways.
Hey, quickly, two more for you. You have the two veteran defenders, and they've been playing a ton, Derek Smith and Shane O'Brien. How important have they been? How have they kind of gone about their business down there?
You know what? They've been unbelievable. I mean, you know, they could, you know, as a veteran guy, you could always go down there with a bad attitude, and that's the one thing I can say for them. They go down there, they're helping the young guys, and they're playing great for us. I mean, you know, whether it's Derek Smith on the power play or, you know, both guys, you know, Obi's just been a physical presence down there. I mean, he's taken the body. He's been in a few fights. I mean, I didn't think he was going to fight down there, but he has. And I can't say it for those guys just to be a professional and go down there and, you know, we still wouldn't be in the playoff hunt if those guys didn't go down there and play well, because they've been a huge part of it here when we've had all these call-ups and injuries.
Hey, final thought for you. We haven't seen Pat Seeloff return to action yet. Do we have an update as to how close he might be? Are we going to see him at all this year, or is the conditioning kind of adjustment going to be too much?
You know, I think it'd almost be, with Patrick, he's close, and but I really think it'd be unfair to put him into the lineup right now where, you know, the pace of hockey, these guys have been playing all year, and it's going to really gear up here the next few weeks. So for his own, not safety, but for his own well-being, I think, you know what, we let the training keep going. We want him back ready to go next year. I mean, he's a big part of, you know, our future, the Flames. So we just don't want to take any more chances. He missed
right.
A lot of time with the injury the year before in juniors and then this year. So we want to make sure he's 100%, and then we'll get him back in. I mean, that's the first thing we want to, you know, we don't want to rush anybody at any point, but this is someone we want to take care of because he has had the injuries for a couple of years, and I don't plan on seeing him this year at least.
Connie, appreciate this, and hopefully your team clinches a playoff spot tonight, but it looks like your group is postseason bound, and I know a lot of people in this city will be paying attention. So thanks so much for giving us an update, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
There's Craig Conroy, the general manager of the Abbotsford Heat, joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline, and they sit 14 games above 500. They're going to be a playoff team. And that's going to be very interesting because they're going to be healthier. They're not getting Tyler Wotherspoon back, we know that, but they'll get Granlund back, and they'll get likely they'll get Granlund back, and there might be some of the names down there that that get a little healthier, and you know Billings will come back, and Breen will come back, and you'll start to see this group get to be a little bit more to the point where they feel like it's a little bit closer to their everyday roster. And you know, you've got Morgan Klimchuk and Brett Kulak who are playing down there, and or at the very least who are with the team down there and practicing with them. I'm curious as to how deep this group might be able to go, because when they were healthy and when they didn't have all the injuries at the big club level and at the American League level, this team was fighting near the top of the American Hockey League in the first half of the season. It'll be very interesting to see how the top affiliate of the Flames moves their business forward heading into the postseason. Pat Steinberg along with you as the Big Show rolls on your Tuesday afternoon. We are in studio, and next up, one of sports' greatest moments happened 40 years ago today. That's next on The Big Show. It's Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talking sports in the afternoon from Calgary, Alberta. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Come on. Parisi carries back behind the net, goes offensive right corner, slides to Koivu. Koivu will come off that right half wall for Parisi. Back in front of shot, score! Coyle scores for Minnesota. Charlie Coyle from the right circle with a power play goal. Just 2 seconds remained in the penalty time to Stewart. Coyle finds the back of the net. Wild lead at 1-0.
And that is all the Minnesota Wild would need last night in a 1-0 win over the Winnipeg Jets. A win that basically, not officially, but basically clinched their way into the postseason. The Phoenix Coyotes would basically have to win every single game until the end of the season, and Minnesota could lose every game, and that's the only way there might be a chance.
And
the
that
Wild
would tie them.
Exactly, that would tie them, and we'd have to see what the regulation wins would look like, the regulation overtime wins. Basically, one more point from Minnesota or one more lost point for Phoenix, and the Wild have clinched one of the two wild card spots in the Western Conference. But that, to me, Josh, that's not all that significant. Big Show rolls on. He's Josh Humphries. My name is Pat Steinberg. What's significant about it is what we saw in net, because that's back-to-back shutouts now for Ilya Brizgalov. He made 24 saves last night, and all of a sudden we're like, wait a second, have the Wild solved their goaltending issues? Get this. Since Brizgalov was acquired at the trade deadline, he has allowed just 16 goals in 10 games, and he has 3 shutouts.
Hasn't lost in regulation yet.
All of his losses have come in overtime.
Or the shootout, yeah.
Or a shootout. And yeah, he's turned back the clock to when he was a real marketable commodity coming out of Anaheim. And he had that run with Phoenix when he first started with the Coyotes. And we're talking about Brizgalov really turning back the clock in a lot of ways and giving the Minnesota Wild probably their most consistent goaltending all year long. Like, Darcy Kuemper had a pretty nice stretch in there, too.
He's hurt.
But from Harding and Backstrom to start, and now we're talking about Brizgalov and Kuemper, and I mean, it's all kinds of goaltending turnstiles in Minnesota this year. Have they found somebody they can be confident in heading into the postseason in Ilya Brizgalov? And I kind of lean towards no. If you ask me, I'm not sitting here and saying, well, you know what? I think Brizgalov's going to steal him a few games in round one, and they might be able to push the St. Louis Blues or the Anaheim Ducks or the San Jose Sharks. I just don't see it. Good on Briz, and it's awesome to see, and it's a nice story, but I'm not feeling it. Like, I'm not feeling it come postseason time.
I'm on the opposite. I mean, if it is Ilya Brizgalov that is the guy going into the net, yeah, he could steal a couple games. But based on what we saw the last time Brizgalov was in the playoffs with the Philadelphia Flyers, it didn't go very well for that team at all. So maybe, you know, Brizgalov might not do that. I mean, but I think what we've seen from Brizgalov here is he's rejuvenated his career. He's back to being one of the best players in the NHL, one of the best goaltenders the last few handful of weeks. Certainly with a .929 save percentage, Ilya Brizgalov has been pretty good for that team, for the Minnesota Wild. But I like this team, the way they're built outside of their goaltending as well, with what they've got on this team, the addition of Matt Molson at the deadline, what they've got on their back end. I like their mix of youth and their veteran presence they've got, and how Ryan Suter's been an anchor, and Pominville and Parisi are good. They're getting healthier, and I had Tom Reed earlier on today on Hockey Central Noon talking about him, and they're a team that's pretty confident in the way they played in the last little bit. If you look at the standings, they have 94 points right now. Everybody puts LA as one of those upper teams in the Western Conference. LA only has 96 points. So Minnesota's right there with the upper teams in the Western Conference. And the way Anaheim has struggled, they're only, you know, a handful, two or three games above 500 since the Christmas break. So I'm thinking the Minnesota Wild, if they do take on Anaheim, I wouldn't bet on it, but I would say that Minnesota upsetting Anaheim wouldn't be like, you know, blow me away.
It would still blow me away. I'm not sold yet. I'm kind of happy to see Briz doing what he. I like to cheer for Briz Gallup. He's a guy that I like to. I like to see the guy succeed. He was asked about his recent success.
That's a hockey. You know, it's only game. Why you have to be mad? He's a good guy.
Yeah. It's...
Who's a good guy?
It's important. He is. He's talking about himself. He's talking about himself. I had a little bit more to say about his recent success.
Right now, I'm very into the universe, you know, like how it was created, you know, like what is it, you know, the solar system is so humongous big, right?
That's my favorite part.
Anytime we have an excuse to play a little bit of Ilya Brizgalov and some of the weird things that come out of his brain, I'm fine with it.
If you kill the tiger and they find you,
yeah.
You're dead. That's it.
he is the best character in the National Hockey League, and half the time he's irrelevant. But right now, he's kind of relevant. It's kind of cool to see.
I'll give him this, all the off-ice stuff and all those quotes and stuff. We certainly haven't heard that from Brizgalov this year. Like that entertaining stuff, and maybe it's obviously because he's not featured on 24/7 this year, where all of those and the majority of those quotes came except for the first one.
Not this one.
No, that's that a hockey, you know.
This was not on 24/7.
It's only game. Wasn't. Why you have to be mad?
It's a good question, though, and it's good to see Ilya Brizgalov having some success once again.
And it's good to see in Minnesota what they go through with their goaltending situation and the Josh Harding, how, like, you know, that's such a tough thing to have to go through as an organization, let alone as one of, like, the individual, what Josh Harding's going through as well. So they've had five goaltenders now in that organization this year playing for them. The John Curry, the guy who's been there, hasn't seen the action yet as the backup goaltender, Ilya Brizgalov. But who would have thought Nicklas Backstrom gets hurt, Josh Harding gets hurt, Darcy Kemper, all out of the lineup at the same time, and you still find a way to have 94
ridiculous.
Points and be the top wildcard team in the West. Some credit going to Mike Yeo and to Chuck Fletcher for the team they've built there.
So once again, just because I'm now shamelessly doing it.
That's a hockey, you know, it's only game. Why you have to be mad?
We only get to do it like once every, like he's only relevant once every few months. So when we do, we really have to take our shots. We really have to make sure that we get it right. But good on Ilya Brizgalov. He's having some good success in Minnesota right now. I still think they're pretty easy first-round fodder for whoever they play coming into one of the two wild card spots. I teased it prior to the break. 40 years ago today, something pretty remarkable happened, and something that still stands up 40 years later.
Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7-15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
April 8th of 1974, Hank Aaron became the all-time leader in career home runs with 715. He would retire with 755 and hold that record for, you know, 30-plus years in Major League Baseball. And I guess on the 40th anniversary of what Henry Aaron did in that game and what he did in his career and how he retired, I guess it just kind of drives home a point to me in that I'm not going to come here and stomp all over Barry Bonds' career. I'm not going to sit here and get into a steroids argument. Mm-hmm. It's just more a comment on the two gentlemen, the last two gentlemen to hold the all-time home runs record in baseball. In that, 40 years after Henry Aaron did what he did, it still stands up as one of the greatest moments of all time. You had the moron running around with them on the base paths, and you just had the elation and the overall class act that was Hank Aaron. You go from that, and then I don't think in 40 years from now, or I guess 33 years, or wherever we're at right now, when it's the 40th anniversary of Barry Bonds setting the new all-time record, like, do you think that we'll be having retrospects the same way 40 years later? And I just can't see it happening, because the way Hank Aaron went about his business, and the turmoil and the backlash and the hardship and all of what he had to battle through during his days as a baseball player, to then contrast it to Barry Bonds, who, even though he's never been proven to be a cheater, there is enough there that a vast majority of people put in question his records, and the type of personality he was off the field, and not the most affable gentleman, and was surly at the best at times. I don't know. I find it to be a very interesting contrast of two things, because I can honestly tell you, I know that he set the all-time record, and I know, because I went and researched it today, that on August 7th of 2007, Barry Bonds hit home run number 756. But I can also honestly tell you that I have no idea where I was. I have no idea, you know, who he was playing against. And I certainly don't think in 33 years from now, when it's 40-year anniversary for that, I'm going to be looking back on that and saying, geez, I'm going to tell my kids about the time Barry Bonds broke the all-time home run record. Yet, you and I, having never been alive, having not been alive, rather, when that was hit, when he did that 40 years ago, We both can sit here and recognize how massive an accomplishment it was, and how resounding and standing the test of time that moment was. It's just interesting to me, the contrast.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, it is true because of what Barry Bonds is off the field, and what, you know, the steroid scandal and things, and a lot goes to how, you know, classy of a guy you are, or the kind of person you are portrayed in the media. And I think Barry Bonds didn't do himself any favors to be portrayed well in the media, and he wasn't a guy that was a friendly guy and things like that. So a lot of people, you know, don't really look at that record, and it was weird. Bud Selig wasn't in attendance for that game at all, which is kind of a strange situation to think that the commissioner of baseball wouldn't even show up to the game where, you know, has potential to hit that home run. So there's a lot of factors like that, that it certainly wasn't the monumental celebration that you would have expected it to be.
It just, it's a comment on the atmosphere at the time, the climate of baseball at the two different times it happened. All of what was swirling around Barry Bonds at the time, and certainly, you know, when you had the congressional hearings and you had him being on trial for perjury and all of that, it certainly, it makes one moment stand up even more, I think. And I mean, I know that, you know, there's a lot of people saying, well, and I feel like people who do this just so they can get in an argument and just to be contrarian. But they're like, well, Barry Bonds has never proven, and he never, look it. Are you really trying to tell me that you believe that Barry Bonds did everything clean? Well, maybe Hank Aaron didn't do it clean.